Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, who are coming to us from U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the Packers have dropped their Week 1 game 23-7 to their NFC North rivals. Guys, seems to be coming a little bit of a pattern here for the Packers to come out flat in Week 1 and start 0-1. As quarterback Aaron Rodgers, though, said after the game, this game was not as bad as last year's Week 1 loss because it was 4 points better. I mean, that's just basic math, right, Spoon? It was 4 points better.
Yeah. What are you going to say? You know, the margin of victory was better. So they're getting closer each week or each year. They get a little bit closer.
That's what I wrote in my lead was at least it wasn't 38-3. It was 4 points better on offense. It was 15 points better on defense. It wasn't 38-3, but it kind of felt like that at times.
It did. A lot of slow moments, especially in the first half for the defense, allowing, as many of them said, the one guy who can't beat them to beat them. Justin Jefferson finished with, I need to pull it up because it was an absurd amount of yards. It was his best game of his career, and this is a guy who had the best first two seasons in NFL history. He finished with 9 receptions for 184 yards, 2 touchdowns, including a long of 64. Spoon, Ryan, Justin Jefferson told Vikings reporters after the game that he was so shocked Jaire Alexander wasn't on him on that 64-yard reception that it shook him up. He looked behind him for Jaire Alexander, and when he wasn't there, it took him a moment to recover before he went and scored a 64-yard – or before he went and finished off that 64-yard reception. That kind of sums it up right there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether he should have been because that play looked messed up. There was something wrong in the secondary because – Alexander went with him and then broke out like it was his own, and someone else was playing it man. So I don't know what happened on that play. Who was at fault there?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I asked Matt LaFleur immediately after the game, first question in the press conference, why not match him? And that was his answer, because they wanted to play zone. And in theory, zone, as it's designed, is to eliminate the big plays. Mm-hmm. Now, that only works if you actually cover the guy. And that was really the problem with the Packers, is that not only did they give up a lot of – they didn't cover Justin Jefferson. I mean, there should have been a neon sign written in all caps right across his chest, right across his chest, saying, cover me. And they didn't. So, you know, it wasn't so much the yards. It was how it was done. And – you know, you can play zone, but when zone gives up 9 catches on 11 targets for 184 yards and 2 touchdowns, you might want to play something else, and they never did. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of stats that you can throw out to just show how much Justin Jefferson wrecked this game. But how about this? Kirk Cousins in 11 passes to Justin Jefferson had a perfect 158.3 passer rating. In all other passes, 21 other passes to anyone else, he had a 76 passer rating. Anyone else is who Jaire Alexander mostly covered in this game. And everyone else, I mean, literally, both safeties, the other two corners, even Quay Walker and Preston Smith got in on covering Justin Jefferson. Everyone else is who covered Justin Jefferson. So the inability to make any adjustment and just put Jaire Alexander on the right, put Eric Stokes on the left and leave him there as he was wrecking the game, I thought that was the most shocking thing.
Yeah, and to the point, earlier this week I was asking Rasul Douglas about, like, what went wrong with Justin Jefferson in this game last year in Minnesota. And he said there was not enough communication. And when we would hand him off to another defensive back, there was no communication, and then there would be no one there. So this game plan has hurt them before with this receiver. They knew that this could happen, and there was still not an adjustment. Jaire Alexander and Rasul Douglas have been saying all offseason, not just this week, all offseason, that they want to cover this guy. And there was still no adjustment for that. I mean, Jaire Alexander, after the game, he tried to get away with not saying anything at first. Some reports from the locker room said he tried to zip his lips, and then he couldn't help himself. One of his quotes was, quote, "The game plan was to not allow 18 to beat us. Why wasn't I on him? That's not my call. Anybody watch me play? You know that's what I want." As we said, he made it clear all offseason that's what he wanted. I mean, there were a couple of times that I'd remember him on Justin Jefferson. In fact, that was probably two of his non-completions. One of them was down inside the 10-yard line, and Jair had him, and Jair was able to get an offensive pass interference call on that play. And then another time, Jair was on him on the line on a third down, and because he had him covered up, Kirk Cousins had to go to Osborne instead, and that's when Keyshawn Nixon just met him at the line of scrimmage and stopped and had to force a punt. So when we saw Jair on Justin Jefferson, it worked. I mean, is that – Spoon, you disagree?
Yeah, well, so if you're going to play Justin Jefferson man-to-man, you have to commit to playing man-to-man just about everywhere because, you know, they're going to put him in motion. Alexander's going to be running all over the defense. I think they could have matched maybe side to side and had him anytime Jefferson was on the left, you put him, you know, on the Packers right. If he's on the right, he'd put him on the left. But you have to commit to playing man to man or else come up with a Bill Belichick type scheme to pull that off. And they don't have that kind of a scheme. I honestly would love to be in the corrections meeting to understand what went wrong on some of those coverages because he shouldn't be that wide open. So something's wrong. You don't design a defense that allows Justin Jefferson to run, you know, a deep cross and nobody goes with him. So, I think Kevin O'Connell saw things that have hurt Joe Barry's defense in the past, and he just laid on them. You know, he put on the accelerator on every single one of those things, and the Packers really didn't have an answer.
To kind of build off that, and Ryan, I'll let you address this too. I understand your point about if you're going to do that and you're going to put Jair on Justin Jefferson the whole time, you're committing to playing man across the board because it's very hard to play both. But that being said, I mean, when I'm trying to figure out the best way to word this, I understand the idea behind wanting to play zone, not to give up big plays. But when that's not working, should there be an adjustment?
You're exactly right. I couldn't have put it better myself, Cassidy. That's exactly it. I get coming in, zone is designed to take away big plays. This guy's killed you in the past in big plays. So I get the whole concept of let's play zone.
And it's like it's leaning on your defense's ability to get turnovers too, another thing they did not do in zone.
When you start the game out the way that they did, and their first drive, a touchdown drive, was all Justin Jefferson, and then that continues, what I don't understand is how you don't try anything else, how you don't change anything. There was no adjustments. They stayed with the same thing. That part eludes me. And as a whole, I'll be very succinct about this. There's a lot of bad that happened for the Packers today. I mean, they lost 23-7. It's a lot of bad on the field when you get lopsided, blown out like that. I think, you know, we saw it last year. The opener, week one, it's a long season. This team's going to be fine long term. They're going to be at the end of the year, if they stay healthy, they're going to have a winning record, be in the playoffs. I think they still win the NFC North. They're going to be a title favorite by the end of the year. The only thing to me that matters that happened today is the big deal. They can't cover Justin Jefferson. They couldn't do it last year. They couldn't do it today. Unless Sean Mannion's the quarterback, they cannot cover Justin Jefferson. That's a big deal because the dude's in your division. You're going to have to figure out how to cover Justin Jefferson for the next 5-8 years plus. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, you know what also surprised me, maybe it didn't surprise me, but when you come into a game like this, you have to have some pressure packages. So, okay, he's beating you because Kirk Cousins is, you know, he was under pressure at sometimes, but other times it's a four-man rush and he's got enough time. You got to have a pressure package where then you can put Alexander on Jefferson and you go man. You know, you start bringing some people at him. And Joe Barry didn't do that at all. That's not what he does. But still, you've got to have a pressure package to get Kirk Cousins off his spot. I don't understand that.
Here's the thing. I don't disagree with you because, I mean, that's football one-on-one, right? Pressure the quarterback, make him feel uncomfortable. I mean, that's what the Vikings did to Aaron Rodgers today. And that's football 101. The thing I'll say, though, is when you don't cover a guy and that's the guy you don't cover, I don't think any amount of pressure in the world matters. They didn't cover him.
Yeah, but they were long. They were long developing routes. You know, he was running through the zone from one side of the field to the other side of the field, and it was causing great confusion. And at least if you're bringing somebody, you know, a corner blitz from Rasul Douglas, a blitz from Stokes, you know, someone's got to come through and shake up what you're doing. And I don't understand how they couldn't do that.
It's worth trying. And the biggest problem is that they didn't try anything else. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, at least try it. I don't know if it makes a difference, but the reason I don't know if it makes a difference is because we didn't even see it. They didn't try it. The thing is, though, the other part is about zone. There were a ton of miscommunications out there. It was so easy because they couldn't communicate, and zone is about communication. So not only you're playing zone and he's wrecking you in zone, he's doing whatever he wants against your zone, but then on top of that, you're seeing all these miscommunications and how wide open the one guy you got to cover is getting. And even with those miscommunications, they're not willing to do anything else. What they did today made no sense.
Speaking of getting to the quarterback, and actually before we head into this conversation, just a little NFL news, because this might, depending on the timeline, affect the Packers here in a few weeks. Dak Prescott is headed for surgery and will be out for a while with a hand injury. So that could definitely affect the Packers in a few weeks. Speaking of affecting and getting to the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers was sacked 4 times. Za'Darius Smith led it off and then did his signature army crawl celebration. He was credited with only 1 sack, but LaFleur and Rodgers kind of gave him credit for 2 because he got into the backfield at one point and pressured Rodgers into a sack from Hicks, which also caused a fumble. That was on the first drive of the third quarter when the Packers offense needed literally anything else to happen. The only thing that could have been worse was a pick 6. That being said, Za'Darius Smith said all week, this is what he wanted. That's why he went to Minnesota, was to play the Packers twice, to sack Aaron Rodgers. He said after the game, to be on this side and get to sack my quarterback was special, meaning sacking Aaron Rodgers. So I thought that was an interesting terminology there. How much of that, Ryan, was Za'Darius Smith? How much of that was Jake Hansen and a sort of patched offensive line?
Well, you know, Cassie, let's not forget maybe the biggest play he made all game, which was the 4th-and-1 crash down from the right edge. I mean, that was a game changer. And he made that play happen by how – stop me.
On the goal line.
Wondered this before. Yeah, 4th-and-goal. Yeah. Stop me if you wondered this before. Can Za'Darius Smith play the run? Yeah, he played the run, 4th-and-goal. He crashed hard off the edge. I think Aaron Rodgers said after the game that maybe, you know, if he kept it, he would have walked in because that entire edge got crashed. But he didn't. And, I mean, that more than the sacks and the pressure, and Za'Darius Smith as a pass rusher did what Za'Darius Smith does. I mean, he made his presence felt. That was probably the biggest play he made all day. So, look, he made it very clear. He wanted to play this team. He came back to the NFC North after the deal fell through with the Baltimore Ravens this offseason. He wanted to play this team. He did not hide that fact. And if you're going to talk like that, you better back it up. He absolutely backed it up. So you got to imagine he felt pretty good about how this day went.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connell said after the game, he was asked, was Za'Darius Smith the spark your team needed today? And he said, my only worry with Z coming into this game is that he would be too hyped up, but he definitely is who got us all going. Said a lot about what Za'Darius Smith kind of did in that locker room before this game, because these revenge games can be dangerous. They can swing one of two ways, and it seemed to swing Za'Darius Smith's way on Sunday. But Spoon, just to kind of take the other side of that argument there, was this offensive – let me back up. With 2020 vision, looking back at how the game went, do you support the decision to sit Bakhtiari and Jenkins?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it was a decision. I think it was a, you know, medical thing. I don't think David Bakhtiari, we talked about it in the podcast. We talked about it all week that there was no way he was going to play. The guy had not practiced enough to be back. He had just been back. He maybe practiced in pads two or three times. I think this is a process. And I thought Elgton Jenkins pretty much told us this week that he wasn't going to play when he said this thing takes time. And I don't think it was even a question of whether they could throw them out. I think it was a medical decision that they can't, that McKenzie told them don't do it. And I think it was the best decision. I do. Whatever is the best decision for them long-term versus one game is fine. And they've gone with this offensive line all through the preseason. They've been together. They should have been able to do better than they did. And the part that was most probably head-scratching was the amount of mental mistakes it sounds like they made. I mean, I want to hear more about it from LaFleur, but Roger sure indicated that there were a lot of mistakes up front. And it wasn't like Minnesota did anything that complicated. They kept both safeties back. I've never seen Harrison Smith play as deep as he did against the Packers. He made a living in, you know, coming up on the line of scrimmage against Rodgers in the Mike Zimmer defense. I don't think I saw him up there once. You know, it was, they just sat back in a cover four, cover two kind of set and took away everything.
That was something that Greg Olson, the color commentator, noted several times during the game, was look how far back the Viking safeties are playing. It seemed just as shocked as you did, Spoon. To your point about, like, this is who they've kind of rolled with all during training camp, was it just, I guess, maybe the placebo effect or seeing things that weren't there? It felt like this offense had its best drive of the day when Zach Tom came in after John Runyon left to be evaluated for a concussion. That's when they put together the only touchdown drive of the day they had was Zach Tom's first drive. I mean, is that coincidence, Ryan, or Spoon? You looked like you wanted to jump on that.
Yeah, that's coincidence. The reason they moved the ball on that drive was because they went with Dylan and Jones for most of that drive. They either had them both in the game or they used one of them. They got them matched up with linebackers. Aaron Jones had just that Aaron Jones run should have been what Za'Darius Smith's sack and what Justin Jefferson's touchdown was. I mean, that thing was, he was breaking tackles right and left. The sideline was just, you know, in a frenzy after that. And why you would, and they finished the drive off, you know, giving the ball to Dylan. Why you would all of a sudden stop doing that, I don't know. I don't get it at all.
I'm shocked that they did not go with their two best players on offense more. And it's not just because the score got out of hand. I mean, sometimes you get down early, the run game can fade. That's how it works. But even when the score was in hand early, they came out with a mentality of balance. And they threw it more than they ran it from the very beginning. And there's really two things that shocked me today. One was that the Packers never adjusted out of zone coverage against Justin Jefferson. And the other is that A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones had 15 carries combined. They averaged more than 6 yards per carry. It's not like they weren't getting production on the ground. They were getting production on the ground when they got the ball, but they were not getting the ball. You knew all camp, all offseason. You knew since St. Patrick's Day when they traded Devontae Adams that this offense has to operate with the bedrock being those two guys in the backfield. And you just kind of took it for granted. Like, of course they know. Of course it's going to be Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones, they're going to be on the field together. They're going to rotate in. That's going to be the foundation of this offense. They come out today, and that was not the foundation of this offense. I mean, that was shocking.
Yeah, to kind of build off of that, Ryan, as you mentioned, they had 15 rushes between them, only 23 touches between them, because we've heard so much about how they could also be used in the passing game. We've seen it in training camp. A.J. Dillon did lead all receivers. He had, I believe it was five receptions for 46 yards. But between he and Aaron Jones, they touched the ball 23 times.
And only four times in the last 20 minutes.
So really?
The last 20 minutes of the game from the 5:30, whenever it was that Dillon scored, they touched it four more times combined. So, you remember that was that series where Rodgers kept trying to find something down the field. You know, he was lucky he hit Dobbs. Somehow Dobbs got wide open, and then he took a sack, and then or there was a sack before that, and then he hit Dobbs, and then he took another sack. And it was what that offensive line needed to do was line up, throw Mercedes Lewis out there, maybe throw Tanyan out there too, and just pound it. If they're going to keep both safeties back, pound it and get that line some confidence.
And to that point, Spoon, touches are usually the more important barometer for how much a dual-purpose back is used. It's just getting them the football. But in this game, the 23 touches weren't the problem. It was the 15 carries. The 15 carries were the problem because they had to run the ball, especially when you're down your best two pass blockers and your top receiver. And you know that going into the game. You're going to be relying heavily on two guys that have never played in this league before, and Christian Watson and Romeo Doubs, because you don't have Alan Lazard, and you don't have your full complement of pieces to protect Aaron Rodgers in the pass game. You have to run the ball. It's not just the 23 touches. It's 15 carries. That's nowhere near enough.
No, but I would also say get the ball in their hands any way you can. This is one of those games where whatever you can do, get the ball in their hands. They're your two best players on the field. You know, your two best offensive players. And they did a pretty good job throwing it. I agree they needed to run it more. You're right. But, you know, when you get into a situation in the second half where you're down 17-0, whatever it takes, just go with the guys who it's just treat them like Davante Adams. You know, that's what Rodgers would do. When he got in trouble, he'd go to Davante Adams. Well, now you got to go to Aaron Jones and E.J. Dillon.
If they come out running, maybe Justin Jefferson doesn't put up 200 yards, because the run game is what controls the clock. It controls the tempo. It keeps your defense rested. I thought from a defensive standpoint, the problem tonight wasn't that they gave up a few long drives and they gave up 23 points, because with as little support as they got from their offense, no defense is going to be able to withstand all that. The problem on defense is that where were the big plays? I mean, there was not a lot of pass rush. There were no turnovers. This a great defense makes plays, and that was missing. Mm-hmm. That was a big problem for this defense. But from, you know, they got worn down. A run game can help you prevent that. And from the very beginning, they did not run the ball. So I hear what you're saying, Spoon. Those are your two best players. Get them the ball no matter what. But in this game especially, considering the pieces that were out, get them the ball on the ground. Lead with the run game. Use the run game. And they didn't do that.
I don't know if this changes your opinion or not at all, Ryan. The two teams actually ran the exact same number of offensive plays. They both ran 61 plays.
Yeah, this was a game, though, that they need. 50-50 wasn't. You have 50-50, you're not going to be able to cover Justin Jefferson.
The part that made that about running the ball a little tougher was that they weren't always getting the kind of push they needed from up front. Now, you know, that's why I would have maybe put Mercedes Lewis and do some double tight end stuff. And you know, you got to get some play action in there. But again, you know, Jones and Dillon, how many times, You know, it's just the eye roll city. Oh, yeah, we got to get them the ball more. Well, okay, whatever. You know,
six yards a carry, and they had 15 carries. They were getting run yards. You average over 6 yards a carry, you're doing some things in the run game, except that they weren't doing it because they only had 15 carries.
When you do get behind and you do have to start throwing, Spoon, as you were saying, that's when Rodgers is going to have to start relying on Jones and Dylan more. I don't know if you could tell this in the press box, but during the broadcast, Packers fans were given continuous updates on how Davante Adams was doing with the Raiders. There were several drop-ins just to check on Davante Adams. He was Rodgers' safety blanket. Rodgers told Aaron Andrews that. He's told us that he was there. Davante was his safety blanket. Y'all have covered Aaron Rodgers longer than I have, so enlighten me here. When the times that he was seeming to try to force things downfield and he held onto the ball, you mentioned that he held onto the ball too long a couple of times, partly what led to, I would say, at least 50% of those sacks. Is that Rodgers trying to play hero ball? Is that guys not getting open? Is it a combination of the two things? I mean, is he the sort of guy that would play that game, Spoon?
So I think they had a game plan that was pretty diverse. I think they wanted to run the ball some. They wanted to pass the ball. They wanted to get Watson involved. They wanted to get Dobbs involved. And I think that was fine. But once you got behind 17-0, then you do whatever it takes to win. And getting the ball to those guys was not going to be the answer to winning. And so Rodgers, I think, approached it a lot like he has other games, that I don't know if it was hero ball, but I think it was, this is what he knows. He can pass a team, you know, back into a game. And rightly so, yeah, he can. But he's got to figure out that, you know, in these situations, your best player are your running backs, not your wide receivers. That's just not the case right now. It's going to be Robert Tonyan. When Lazard gets back, it'll be him. And then Aaron Jones and Dylan. Those are your go-to guys.
Robert Tonyan, in his first game back since tearing his ACL, had 3 catches on 5 targets for 36 yards, including a long of 23. And that long of 23 was mostly a catch and run. So good to see him sort of turn and get upfield and get around a defender. All of that to say, Ryan, how long can this offense go without needing Alan Lazard back? Yesterday?
Good question. I mean, I don't mean that he's their wide receiver one. I don't mean to undersell Alan Lazard. It matters. But if you're not going to run the ball, because this offense is designed for Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon to be your best two players. So if you're not going to run the ball, Alan Lazard doesn't tip the needle that much, right? He's not Davante Adams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Davante Adams, okay, don't run the ball, just throw it to 17. But he's not Justin Jefferson. He's not Cooper Kupp. He's not Stephon Diggs. He's a solid receiver. And yes, they need him back for sure because he's their best receiver. And then you're playing the rookies less and you rely on Romeo Dobbs and Christian Watson less. But if they don't run the ball, I don't know if it really matters. And this offense 100% has to be able to run the ball and not just a little.
Well, after all that, let's talk more about the passing game. We saw the first play. Okay. Spoon called the first play on our podcast a couple of days ago.
Yes, he did.
And then tonight, after the game, Ryan, if listeners didn't catch this, Ryan asked Matt LaFleur when he came up with the play, and he paused. And in that 2-second pause, I just knew he was about to say, oh, I got it from Spoon after they listened to the podcast. I'm 1,000% convinced that that's where he got it from, and that's what he wanted to say. All that being said, the first play was a deep shot to Christian Watson, and he had it. He got separation from Patrick Peterson. I think he had more than 3 yards of separation from him. Aaron Rodgers put it on the money. It was a perfect ball, and he dropped it. And Matt LaFleur had warned us this is going to be an imperfect game with the rookies. Rodgers said afterwards he can live with the drops. He can't live with the mental mistakes. All of that to say, that would have been quite an introduction for Christian Watson, and something that I would imagine they want to get fixed ASAP. Spoon, is the drop as much of a concern to you, or is it not a concern, sort of like Rogers was saying, and more the mental mistakes that need to be addressed?
It's absolutely a concern. That was his knock in college, was that he dropped the ball too much, and he dropped a lot of balls just like that one. Scouts knocked him big time. I mean, there were some scouts who didn't like him at all because he dropped the ball so much. So, yeah, that's really worrisome. The part that probably encouraged them was that he didn't, crawl up into a ball after that. And he contributed quite a bit in the run game. I thought his blocking was outstanding. Probably as good as, not as good as Lazard's, but it was right there. I mean, he was blocking better than some of the offensive linemen. So they at least know they've got a guy who's not going to just fall apart after a drop. But he's got to make those catches. That's all there is to it.
And, you know, Spoon, I think the other thing that encouraged them, dude's really fast. I mean, mm-hmm. He completely dusted Patrick Peterson. I mean, Aaron Rodgers called it a great route, and that's true. He ran a great route. So I think it had to be – I'm not – the drop, you got to catch the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's – it's on a tee. It's as easy of a touchdown catch as you'll ever get at this level. But the hard part is what he did well, which is getting that wide open against Patrick Peterson, right. Getting off the line of scrimmage and being completely wide open. If that's what he can do, if you're the Packers, I'm not saying you're not concerned about the drop. You got to catch the ball, but you almost got to – okay, if he can catch the ball, put that together with that speed and that route running – you've got something there, because you can't teach that kind of speed. It's innate. And mm-hmm. I thought that was, he did the hard part pretty well.
I have the news on in the background. And as we're talking about this, they're showing that play from three different angles. To your point about the blocking, Spoon, in my notes, I have him with at least two he sprung two pretty decent little pickups. He sprung AJ Dillon and he sprung Bobby Tonyan. On two different runs. And so
was a screen. Yeah.
Yeah. And so encouraging to see that part of it. Romeo Doubs. Let's see what he did. He
4 or 5 for like 35 yards or something like that. Right.
Right.
Yeah. One run
four or five for 37 yards, 4 or 5 for 37 yards. And then one run on an in around for 11 yards. That's when Rogers was his lead blocker against Za'Darius Smith. Doubs and Watson both had a drop and or incompletion, however you want to describe the one with Doubs. And then the next time they touched the balls were on those end arounds. Is that just kind of how they're going to have to fold these rookies in and get them acclimated to this offense, Ryan?
Well, first of all, they're turning the lights off.
Did lights just go off behind you?
Wow. Let there be light. Oh, that didn't work for me. We should address how the first initial third down incompletion with Romeo Doubs was, because if you watch the play, I think everyone from the outside is thinking that's a miscommunication with the rookie, because Romeo Doubs cut it in and Aaron Rodgers threw it out. But Aaron Rodgers said after the game that he was throwing that ball away because of the defensive look. He just gave up on the play, which, by the way, Spoon, I'm curious if you'd agree with this or not. I thought today might have been the most I've seen Aaron Rodgers intentionally throw the ball away since that 2018 season when the offense was broken. Since then, I have not seen him throw the ball away near as much as he did today, but that was the first one. And so it was not on Romeo Doubs. Romeo Doubs ran the right route, and that's
justice
important.
For Romeo.
Yeah, that's important to say, because I think everyone's looking at that saying, oh, the rookie ran the wrong route in his first third down. No, Aaron Rodgers threw the ball away. But, I thought it's going to be growing pains for these young receivers, and everyone knows that. Aaron Rodgers alluded to that. This is to be expected. I thought Romeo Doubs showed some moxie in being able to come back and make some plays in his first game. He's not a game breaker yet. He's not going to tilt the field yet. But I do think over the long haul, he's a guy that everything that we've seen so far, and it's still a small sample size, but everything that we've seen so far indicates that he's a player. I thought today kind of more of the same.
Spoon, agree?
Yeah. I think he's a work in progress. I think Christian Watson is the guy who's going to probably overtake Dobbs soon. And then, you know, Lazard's going to come back, and then we'll see how they use him. Like, they didn't use Amari Rodgers at all today, which kind of surprised me as well, because, you know, that could have been a third guy that got involved running the ball a little bit with some, you know, misdirection and other stuff. So we'll see how Dobbs does. I think he's going to be up and down. I think there's going to be, you know, you'll hear from him and then you might not see him much for a couple of games, and then you'll hear from him again. And then, you know, maybe for a couple of games, and then he'll kind of disappear. A lot of it's going to have to do with how Christian Watson performs, I think, because I think they're fast tracking him right now to get to the point where Dobbs was during camp.
I agree with you, Spoon, and here's why. On arguably the most important drive of the game, I think there was about 4 minutes left, down by two. You've got to score and get the ball back. That drive started off with Rodgers going to Aaron Jones, Randall Cobb, Bobby Tonyan, Sammy Watkins, and I remember thinking and making a note of it, okay, he's going to his experienced guys right here. He's going to his veterans. He's going to the ones he knows he can trust to make a play. Then he went to Juwan Winfrey, and then he went to Christian Watson. And Christian Watson picked up 9 yards on a 2nd and 10 and got out of bounds. Next play, he was looking for Watson, and Chandon Sullivan broke up the pass, and then they went for it on 4th down, Tonyan in the end zone, and it got broken up as well. So it didn't end well. But all of that to say, he went to all of his experienced guys, and then with – In one of the biggest plays of the biggest drive, if they were going to make a comeback, he went to Christian Watson. I mean, I feel like that says a lot. Am I reading too much into that, Ryan?
No, I think it's a very good observation on your part. I was thinking the same thing. I think the difference between Christian Watson and Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson is more raw talent. He's faster. He's bigger. And go right back to the first play that he had in the NFL. He did the hard part well, and the hard part is beating Patrick Peterson. Not every rookie can do that, and he could do that because he has the talent. So yeah, I mean, he's the more talented guy. It's just a matter of how long it takes with how much time he's missed.
Guys, we've spent a lot of time on the offense, and I know we spent a lot of time on the secondary. Let's just address the front seven real quick. Let me pull up Dalvin Cook's stats. He finished with 20 rushes for 90 yards, averaged 4.5 a carry. That's a pretty average, not average on a bad way, but that's about what you would expect from Dalvin Cook. Is that any sort of concern, especially with Quay Walker in there? Quay Walker went out in the fourth quarter with a shoulder injury. Before he went out, he had 8 tackles. They seemed to pick on him some, but he answered the bell. I mean, is that safe to say, Spoon?
He was very active. He was all over the place. He also, I think, was partially responsible for one of Justin Jefferson's long plays. I think he blew his own coverage. So I don't know. He had a really active game, and that's what they need from him. I don't know how bad his shoulder injury is, but they need him on the field.
Ryan, after Quay Walker did go out, Chris Barnes came in, and 5 plays later was hurt as well. He was taken off in a cart, leg in a cast. Isaiah McDuffie ended up having to come on. Can this inside linebacker unit get much thinner?
Well, what was a position of depth became thin very, very quickly, and that's the thing. They had impressive depth for them. I mean, comparatively, the deepest inside linebacker group they've had in a long time. Now it's thin. So, you know, anytime you see a guy get carted off and you put the air cast on right away, that's a really bad sign. Doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad injury, but it's not a good indication that that it's going to be something minor. So we'll have to see there. But, yeah, I mean, they need all the depth they can get. You know, when you mentioned the defensive front as a whole, And to Spoon's point about dialing up presser packages, it seemed awfully clear that that Joe Barry thought and believed that he could get home on Kirk Cousins with that defensive front, especially the defensive line. It seemed like he believed in that unit's depth and talent, and they didn't. I mean, Kenny Clark had a couple rushes, Rashawn Gary had a sack, but they weren't a difference maker that I think you expected coming in for them to be. That, you know, that again, like I said, that the lack of big plays, especially generated by the pass rush, was concerning for even this being the first game. That's something that this defense is going to need to do, because great defenses make plays, especially in the pass rush game.
Spoon, Rashawn Gary had, according to the stat sheet, only two quarterback hurries. I felt like he was in the backfield so much more than that, though.
Yeah, I mean, early on, they really picked on rookie guard Ed Ingram for a while, and everybody got a turn at him. But then I don't know. Cousins, they pressured him some, and he did a really nice job of moving around. But I thought their four-man rush was not good enough. I mean, they just didn't knock him down enough times. And they were close. You know, there were a couple times I thought they should have gotten the ball out from Cousins. Like they needed an arm reach or something to get after the ball. And they just never did it. And they just could not get him down on the ground enough. And he, give him credit, I guess, but the rush has to be better.
Okay, we've covered offense, we've covered defense. Let's hop to everyone's favorite subject, special teams. There's not much to talk about because there weren't that many opportunities to kick field goals or PATs. But there's nothing to talk about necessarily that went wrong, which feels like a step forward. Other than maybe, could you argue that Amari Rodgers had too many fair catches on his returns, Ryan?
Yeah, I thought that today was a clear step in the right direction for the Packers special teams. They didn't screw anything up. And that's a big step for this unit. Let's just be real about it.
And there were a couple of times the punt unit really got swarmed and Pat O'Donnell was able to get it off.
Yeah, and I thought Rudy Ford had a pretty good game as a gunner. You know, he missed a couple tackles, but he, even getting down there and getting pressure on the returner, was able to keep their return game from being a problem. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. Usually the opponent's return game is a problem, and it wasn't today. But the next step is to make plays, right? And I don't think they're going to get there overnight. I mean, when they're in the basement, you don't get to the penthouse in one game. This was they went to another level. They went a story higher. They weren't in the basement today. And that's really, really good sign for them. I thought it was interesting, you know, the first play of the season, the opening kickoff, who had the tackle? Eric Stokes, starting corner. You're going to see that more. And I think that made a difference. And Spoon was all over that late in camp about how this preseason special teams, not how their special teams want to look, because there's going to be starters on the special teams. And right off the bat, that starter made a tackle. So, yeah, the first rule of a special teams is do no wrong. And they did no wrong today. And then once you get that established, and it doesn't take just a week, you have to do that over time. Once they over time get that established, then you start making dynamic plays and start tilting the field. That's where they're wanting to get to. But you can't get there when you're screwing things up. And so they didn't screw anything up today. I thought that was promising.
It's a small step forward. They'll take it where they can get it. Spoon, in that conversation about starters, I think at one point I saw Eric Stokes, Adrian Amos, Darnell Savage, and Rasul Douglas all on the field for special teams. I mean, is that what this special teams unit needs, is more of that sort of athletic ability and experience out there?
Yeah, they do. I think you'll see them in spot places. Like, you're not going to see Adrian Amos on four special teams units. You're not going to see Stokes on four special teams units, but they'll use them on one. And I do got to say, though, the punt block unit, they're going to have to take a look at that, because I don't know that the Vikings were – I'm interested to see if they were just flooding the middle, or the Packers need to get some guys who are a little stouter, because it seemed like O'Donnell was under pressure every single time. Now, there was a pocket around him for him to punt, but boy, it was really narrow, and there were a couple times I thought they got really close.
Guys, we saw the Packers lose week one last year and then ended up being the number one overall seed. So we went into this week saying they can lose. They can get by with not playing David Bakhtiari, Elton Jenkins, Allen Lazard, be okay. It's not going to be a huge, huge deal, even though it is against a divisional opponent. Sitting here after the loss, looking at the rest of this schedule, having seen how the team performed in this game, are you concerned? Spoon, go.
Well, I argued with Ryan about the importance of this game. And, you know, at the time I was thinking, well, the Packers might play really well and everybody will think everything is great. I think it's – you saw all kinds of things happen week one. I mean, New England got its butt kicked. Chicago beat San Francisco. All kinds of stuff happens in week one. And I honestly think you don't know who anybody is until week four or five. But the one thing about it is the Packers can't, they can't lose next week. They have to beat the Bears at home, because then they've got Tampa Bay after that. So they got to get their act together soon. And it's not the end of the world that they lost this game. If they beat Minnesota and Green Bay, then everything will be fine. But it's really what happens each week. You know, the next week, you better be better than you were the week before. And that's what happened last year. You know, week two, they were a much better team than week one.
That's a great point, Spoon. Week two is a must-win game. That's something you don't almost ever say, but this is actually a must-win game. Look, I said it before. I think the only thing that mattered tonight, they can't cover Justin Jefferson. That matters a great deal because he's in the division. They're going to see him twice a year. That's a big deal. So I'm not downplaying that. But other than that, no, I don't think anything mattered. They're healthy, other than inside linebacker. And over the course of the year, I had him at 14-3 going into the year. Now I have him at 13-4. That's that, you know. And the thing is, Matt LaFleur, there's two things they haven't done much under him and going into his fourth season now. They haven't won the first game all that much. They haven't won the last game at all, right? He's 2-2 in openers. He's 2-3 in the playoffs, never getting to the Super Bowl. And he's 41-14 overall. So he's won a ton of games in between.
He's really good. I think that you're going to see that.
Well, yeah, real good in the middle.
And they don't ever lose two in a row.
They've only done it once, and that was Detroit last year when the starters only played half a game, and then obviously San Francisco in the playoffs. That's the only time they've ever lost two in a row, and it really wasn't two in a row. It was one and a half. So I don't think that this is going to be a problem for them at all. It doesn't mean they don't have to get back to work and flush it like they did last year. They've got to get things fixed, but I think they will. And I think at the end of the year, you're going to look at this team being one of the shortlist title favorites, just like they're supposed to be.
And they're playing a Bears team that, yes, won today, but did so against Trey Lance in his first start in a reign of biblical proportions. I don't know if y'all got to watch the game, guys, but at times you could not see the field. The rain was so bad. It was completely blinding the camera. So that was sort of just a game of whoever could hold on to the ball the most, and that happened to be the Chicago Bears today. All that being said, the Packers will return home. Matt LaFleur will meet with the media Monday afternoon. We will try to get injury updates on Chris Barnes, Quay Walker, John Runyon, and I'm forgetting a fourth one.
Keyshawn Nixon.
Keyshawn Nixon, thank you. Who made an excellent play that got him hurt. But excellent play for him to come up at the line of scrimmage and make that stop on Osborne. It may have been a little off the line now that I think about it. Point is, he saved a first down. So we'll look to get updates from Matt LaFleur Monday afternoon on those four players. And then hear from the guys as they bounce back and get ready for the Chicago Bears. That's 2 weeks in a row. They're opening their first two games against NFC North opponents. Is that common?
It's happened before.
It's happened before. Okay. Well, yeah. Still figuring it all out. This is my first week one with you guys.
Congratulations.
Y'all didn't seem near as excited about that as I did.
No,
it's not about you, Cassidy.
I'm just trying to wait for this week one to be over.
Yes.
Well, it's almost over. We'll head into Monday, recap it up, and wrap, put a bow on it, and then move on to the Bears. There is full coverage of this game as well on PackersNews.com, recapping it from every angle we can think of, and we've got a couple more things coming for you over the next couple of days before, as we said, we turn our attention to week two. Ryan, Spoon, any final thoughts before y'all book it out of that press box?
Nope. I'm taking this one to the house.
Well, y'all be Spoon. Yeah, never mind. You weren't saying anything. Y'all be safe getting home. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Thanks so much for all your coverage. Thank you all for listening. This has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.